Well, if you like what you've heard so far, wait till you hear this hour as we talk about Alien Agenda, the return of the Nephilim on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back. We're with Dr. Aaron Judkins and Dr. Michael McDaniel talking about their work, Alien Agenda. And here's the subtitle, The Return of the Nephilim. And Aaron, to me, that tells me they were already here and they're coming back.
Well, we know that they have been here in the ancient past. Matter of fact, in Genesis, it talks about that there were giants in the earth in those days, and that the sons of God came into those daughters of men, and those men became mighty men, which were of old, men of renown. And we see this throughout a lot of the ancient cultures. They talk about giants. Matter of fact, the Hebrew talks about the word and uses the word Nephilim, which means the fallen ones. And so we see these things showing up in history, and we're wondering, what are they doing? Why are they so different than modern humans? And then we see these things being, you know, uncovered sometimes in the Middle East. Matter of fact, one of my colleagues, Joe Taylor, if you've ever seen that big old 47-inch human femur Michael was telling you about a while ago on the internet with Joe Taylor, that is an incredible display. But that giant would have stood some 14 to 16 feet tall. Matter of fact, that was found about in the 1950s during a road construction crew in southeast Turkey, I think in the Euphrates Valley somewhere. And this road construction crew apparently back then found tombs containing the remains of these giants. And so we're seeing these things. Matter of fact, in the Americas here, we're seeing remains of red-haired giants over at Lovelock Cave in Nevada and elsewhere. So these things are actually in the archaeological record. We're seeing these giants, and they are doing something very specifically. They're not just normal human people. They are a mixture, if you will, of these fallen angels and the daughters of men.
We were talking about the Marfa lights, and a lot of people say that they're reflections of campfires and automobiles. A lot of other people say, no, they're ghosts or they could be UFOs. We were talking about that. What do you think?
Well, Dr. McDaniel was saying earlier, I got to see the Marfa lights for the first time just a few weeks ago. And we were coming back from that documentary trip in New Mexico, and I wanted to stop through Marfa. And we had been driving all day and all night, late into the night before we arrived in Marfa. And it was rather a full moon out, and it was bright. And I was just kind of disappointed. I said, we're not going to see anything. But we're driving down this lonely stretch of road. And I don't know if you've ever been out there, George.
No, I have not.
We're driving down this two-lane road. It's dark, okay? It's in West Texas. The stars are out, and you're tired. And we're coming up on Valentine, Texas. And my colleague, name's James, he was with me on that trip. And he was driving, and we were both tired. And I said, maybe we can see something. I started looking out the window. And I saw this little dim light off the side of the road. And it got brighter, and I thought, that's not any kind of bus stop. There's no buses out here. There's no people out here. There's nothing out there other than maybe some rattlesnakes. And the light got brighter and brighter, and we zoomed past it, and I stared over at my colleague, and I said, did you see that? And he said, I think so. What did you see? And I said, tell me what you saw first. And so he said, I think I saw a lighted display case of a women's high-heel shoes. And I said, that's what I saw. And so he said, man, I'm glad you saw that. I was fixing to pull over and let you drive for a while. But these high heel shoes were out there, and this lighted display case, the funniest thing. I thought, okay, if we come across a mannequin hitchhiking in these high heel shoes, it's going to be a bad B-rated movie, and we're plowing on. We're not stopping. But we got out there to Marfa, and I walked up on the viewing area, and these people were coming out, and I said, y'all seen anything? And they said, oh, yeah, we've been watching them. So I hustled on back there. And for an hour and a half, George, I watched these things. I don't know what they were, but they were real.
Yep, they're strange.
And they are very strange. And so we're seeing lights. Matter of fact, there was a family out there, and they had a telescope set up. And so they had one in the viewer, and they invited me to come over to take a look. They said, we have one in the viewer. And it was these white balls of light, very brilliant. They would get very intense in their brightness. They would tend to float. They would tend to change color sometimes and even merge with each other. And so I was looking through this viewer, and all of a sudden, three more popped up. And they were all in formation, all four in formation. And it was a very bizarre thing. There was a lady that used to live in that area. She, back in the 1980s, I had a friend who went out there quite often. And this lady was, I don't know, I guess she was probably around 100 years old. And my friend was asking her, she said, what do you think about these Marfa lights? And she said, let me tell you something. She said, when I was a young girl in the early 1900s, and I think it was 1904, she said, I came to Marfa by covered wagon with my mother and dad. She said, we got over here and we saw those lights. We thought they were Indians and no one would go out there. And she gave this story. Well, this predates the town of Marfa. This predates any vehicles. I know a lot of people think they're vehicle lights, but there's no vehicle lights that float in the air like that, none that I've seen. So we're seeing these Marfa lights, and whether they're natural or supernatural, I don't know. But they are really a mysterious phenomenon.
Let's talk about the headline of your book, Alien Agenda. What's the agenda, you two?
Go ahead, Mike.
Well, you know, what we're understanding is that there is a setup that's being done. Right now, things are being done in the acclimation stage. The UFOs that we're seeing and all the things that surround that and the conjecture that goes along with that, we believe is supposed to make us think that this is anything but what it is, that there is this, well, I guess, you know, all the things you're not sure of and you wonder, you know, you asked me that question a while ago, does it bother you at all that, you know, the ancients would look at that as ETs?
Right.
You know, I would say that there's a closer connection than maybe other theologians might think about that, because I believe they actually are connected with those angelic beings, the ones just like the ones that cohabited with men and produced those races of giants, the Nephilim. Those things are a setup for something that's going to be happening in the future on this earth, and which everything is going to be changed.
Well, no, what do you mean by setup?
Well, I think we're being just think of all the things that are happening. Now, I know this sounds a bit like conspiracy, but when you think about the biggest movies that have come along, I mean, for a long time now, we're talking about movies that, you know, talk about those from outer space or UFOs or all that kind of bit. You know, everything from, you know, Independence Day to, you know, Battle Los Angeles and all that kind of bit. And some E.T., you know, they're pictured as good. The whole idea is here they come and they're out there and they're these intelligent beings, and I'm not denying that they're intelligent, but what I'm telling you is that they're going to introduce a world leader. He's going to come on the scene. He's going to take up a political role in the Middle East. He's going to be connected governmentally with the area of Iraq. And the world economy is going to change. World religions are going to change at that time. And I know that everybody has the idea about, you know, a one world government, a one world religion, and all that kind of business. And I'm not denying that. But what I'm saying is the type of religion that he's going to introduce is going to be something completely different than what folks think that is. I believe that that's going to be one of the ancient religions And I'm talking going all the way back to the days when Israel was a nation coming out of Egypt, that there was a prominent ancient religion. It plagued them then. It got a foothold. Because of that issue, they suffered judgment from God, and that religion is going to make a return. And as a matter of fact, it's my understanding, and I know this sounds bizarre, but this world leader is actually a guy who has been here once before. And I know that,
well, when what do you mean
the book of Revelation,
well, hold on for a second,
has an idea about it, but when it talks about the dragon, you know, and the heads of the dragon and all that kind of business, and then you go over to the book of Daniel, and I'm trying real hard to put this in a nutshell. It talks about there are seven, and the eighth is of the seven.
Well, what do you mean by though he was here before?
Well, I'm saying that there was a fella that was he's documented in the scripture, and there was a prophecy concerning him that he was actually going to take into captivity the southern kingdom of Judah, and it looked like that was going to happen. The Assyrian Empire had actually taken the northern kingdom of Israel captive, and now here he comes to the southern kingdom, and it looks like he's going to do that, and the southern kingdom had already been warned by the prophets that this was going to happen to them, but in a boast that their God would not be able to deliver them. The scripture says that God killed 183,000 of the Assyrian army that night, and the next day, this king goes back to Assyria.
So are we talking about a reincarnation?
Well, of a sort. My understanding is it will be the soul and spirit of Sennacherib who will come back and will fulfill that prophecy. And it wouldn't surprise me in the least if he made his appearance by stepping out of a UFO in full view of the world.
So he would come back as an ET, basically.
Well, I believe that everyone will understand him to be that, but he's going to look and act and involve himself in a very much a human way. And the scripture, when you talk about that vehicle, there's a particular phrase that gets mentioned a lot more than people think. It's that phrase, the shadow of death. Now, everybody's familiar with that from Psalm 23 because it gets read at every funeral. And that psalm's really not talking about, it's really not a funeral passage at all. But that aside, there's a couple of passages over in the book of Job that says, there is no shadow of death where the workers of iniquity may hide themselves. And then four chapters later, there's a rhetorical question that God asked Job, and he says, have you seen the doors of the shadow of death? And if my understanding of that is correct, this shadow of death could very well be those UFO craft employed by Sennacherib back on this planet to fulfill that prophecy that was made. The Bible calls it the return of the shadow of degrees. And if that's and I believe that's going to literally be fulfilled in the future. And if it is, this guy, by the way, those seven kings that are talked about over there, and they're over in the book of Daniel, they're all Assyrian kings, and it lists seven of them, and it talks about every one of them, and this guy that's coming at the end is going to be one of the seven.
Do we have a timetable?
Well, I believe we do. I believe we do, and I know you're going to ask me what that is.
That's my next question. If you don't tell me, I'm going to ask it again.
Well, it's going to sound, you know, I'm sure you can understand that when you make a statement like I'm about to make, what you're really wishing is that people had about an hour and a half of foundation for the statement so they don't think you're completely goofy. But I know I can't do that. So here's the timetable. This age in which we are presently living is going to end in an event in which people are going to go missing off of this earth. Now, Christians have been referring to the event of the rapture for a long time. The Bible calls that the blessed hope.
Well, and as you know, we had a false rapture last year from that Herald camping guy.
You know, and that wasn't his first try at that.
No, it wasn't. He's done it before.
I got to tell you, I break those guys over the coals because you can't date that event. That's the thing you can't do. But when that event happens, what you're going to see then is the escalation of all of these issues falling into place in a big hurry, because at the beginning of Daniel's 70th week prophecy, this guy is going to get revealed. And the Bible says, and here's the thing, George, that I'm just wishing folks had the background for, before he's revealed, he's going to ascend out of the bottomless pit.
Now, let me ask Aaron for a second, Michael. Aaron, you're an archaeologist. You're not a theologian. Do you agree with Michael here? You've agreed so far on just about everything.
Well, it's very interesting. No one really knows exactly how this is going to play out. There's different opinions about it. I happen to think that this is a very plausible opinion on what's going to happen. The Bible lays it out in the prophecies of what is going to happen, but it doesn't necessarily give us the specific details sometimes of how it will exactly play out. So, you know, this is something that is certainly a very plausible event, but nevertheless, the end result will be that what we are experiencing now is a foreshadow of that thing to come. And when it comes, it's a system that you do not want to be a part of, because it will be a one-world system. And, George, you know that back in the days when I used to listen to Art Bell, I've been a fan of the program for quite some time, and Art used to say, he used to call it the quickening.
Right.
You remember that?
Yeah, he and Whitley coined
and
that.
Listen, people are saying that there's something coming down the pike. What we're saying is that it is the setup for the Antichrist. And when this thing comes to fruition, it will be a terrible event. Matter of fact, what we're seeing now is what the Bible calls the birth pains of the thing that is to come. And it is a warning sign to the people on this planet that we had better wake up, because if we don't, we are going to find ourselves part of that alien agenda.
So you do echo what Michael says.
Well, I think so. I don't know exactly how, you know, it'll all play out, but certainly I agree on the majority of the points that this thing is going to play out, and there's a connection, George, that's associated with this. And when I saw that connection, I quickly realized that there is something greater going on behind the scenes, and that is this. When people have been taught the theory of evolution and the uniformitarian view that we have evolved from long ages of millions of years and eons of time, and we don't find that in the archaeological record. Matter of fact, other sciences aren't finding it either. We just talked about the genes earlier. They're not finding it. They're finding design. And here's what is going on, is that if evolution is supposedly true on this planet, then it has to be true universally, and that's called the cosmic evolution. Here's the thing. You remember Shirley MacLaine?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, she's been on our show.
She, back in the 1980s, Shirley MacLaine made a very boastful statement, and I say it was boastful because of this. She declared herself to be I Am. Now, there's a connection going on with that. Because the connection is that supposedly we are at the pinnacle of our physical evolution.
Hold on, both of you. We're going to come right back. We'll talk more about the alien agenda on Coast to Coast AM. Okay, next hour we'll take your phone calls as we talk about the alien agenda. I've got a few more questions, though, when we come right back on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast. Aaron Judkins with us, Michael McDaniel. Okay, so this agenda... What do they want? This return, this one man, this individual, Michael, what do they want? What are they seeking?
Let me tell you, this goes all the way back, and this really is the common thread that links all of this together. The Bible lists in Ezekiel 28 and Isaiah 14 a conflict that was going on before man was ever around. And this conflict was between God and between Lucifer, who was lifted up, and there's actually five I wills tucked away over there in Isaiah that he says he wants to do. And the last one is the main goal, where he says, I will be like the Most High. It's interesting that Lucifer does not want to get rid of God. He knows he can't do that, but he says, I'll be like the Most High.
Mm-hmm.
Phrase is defined in the book of Genesis for you when you run into Melchizedek and Abraham, where the Most High is defined over there twice as the possessor of heaven and earth. With the rebellion in the heavenlies, Lucifer gets the first half of that goal. Then with the fall of Adam, he gets the second half of that goal. That's why he's called the prince of the power of the air, and Jesus refers to him as the prince of this world. And what is happening now is a conflict in which Satan is trying to retain his usurped possession of the heavens and the earth, and God is moving to repossess the heavens and the earth back to himself. And this man of sin, this Antichrist, that's going to be revealed. And if I could just insert this right here, if we're thinking about a world leader, you almost have to ask yourself, what country is he going to be from? I mean, it almost begs the question, doesn't he have to be somebody that's out of this world? Because, I mean, that we may all be members of the UN, you know what? We get opposed. You can count on who's going to vote against us. I mean, are we going to put a Russian in charge of the world? Or are they going to allow an American or a Chinese? I mean, who would that be? I mean, can you imagine the difficulty in that? But if a guy lands in a spaceship and walks off, now I'm not saying there's a Bible verse that outright says that. There's not. But if this guy makes that kind of an entrance and he says to the world, you know what, I've got answers. And I mean, man, this is right. The world will fall at this guy's feet. And this is Lucifer's man. And all throughout history, he's had one. There's always been a guy that's been his guy. And this is the final play to get some things done, to get firmly entrenched, to hold on. And that's why this is going to be such a wild ride. He's not going to be what everybody thinks. The Bible actually says he'll come in peaceably. There's a 10-nation confederation that gets together with him. He's going to go over and act like he's Israel's ally. He's going to put down, the Bible says, three of those nations. And those are Middle East nations, by the way, not a European Union. But he's going to put down three of those. He's going to rebuild their temple. He's going to protect them militarily. They're going to say peace and safety.
And they'll know he came down in a craft?
Well, I'm just saying that's a real possibility. This guy comes out of the bottomless pit.
Well, what does that mean, the bottomless pit?
Somehow.
Michael, what does that mean, the bottomless pit?
Well,
he just appears?
My understanding of that is, and the way the Bible describes it, is that there are places underneath this earth, and some of those places were created specifically by God to house certain creatures. Those Nephilim that died in the flood are in a particular chamber in this earth. The Bible talks about when Jesus died, he went to Abraham's bosom. Matthew 12 says he was in the heart of the earth. And there is a particular part of underneath the earth that's called the bottomless pit, and it has different sections in it. And in this particular section, one of those houses fallen angels. This guy, Sennacherib, is down there, and he's going to be let loose out. If you read over Revelation, there's another horde of real crazy-looking beasts, the, face of men, the hair of women, the teeth of lion, the body of a horse, and wings and a tail of a scorpion. They're loosed out of that pit for a number of months on this earth. So there's all kinds of creatures. I've always said that truth is way stranger than fiction, and the Bible really bears that out, that this guy is coming to entrench the satanic hold on the world, and he's got to convince everybody that he's operating in their best interest. But all that's going to change as soon as he gets installed into power, and Israel will get fooled. That's going to be the base of operations over there in the Middle East.
Will we think he's a human being, or will we think he's an extraterrestrial visitor?
You know what? He'll look every bit human, but you remember, he's actually going to declare himself to be God in the world. The majority of the world,
they're going to
believe that. They're going to take his mark, and they're going to believe that he's a God.
All right, so you've tied in Revelation to this, right?
Absolutely.
All right, Aaron, let's bring you in as the archaeologist. Where's the science here? Is there any?
Well, this really gets into the realm of theology and eschatology, and there's no archaeological record that leads up to this other than, George, that we see throughout all of history that men have worshipped either a monotheistic god or a polytheistic god. Matter of fact, all men know five things. Every man knows that there's a God, but they have no fellowship with him. Every man knows that there's life after death, but he's not sure where it's at. Every man knows that they have sinned, but they have no liberty from that sin. Every man knows that they have a judgment coming, but they have no hope in it. And number five is every man knows that there's a death, and they fear it. So we see people throughout history worshiping fallen angels, worshiping deities because of this need to try to connect with someone greater than them. But they are doing it through an occultic means, through occultic practices. And, you know, Francis Bacon said people prefer to believe what they prefer to be true. And that really is true. We're seeing this, and so when the Antichrist comes on the scene, it will be that he makes such an appearance that it will be at a time of great distress in the world. Matter of fact, I quote a politician in the book, and he said, you know, we have too many committees. We have too many people on boards. What we really need is someone a sufficient stature to come in and to clean up the economic chaos and to solve the world's problems and be him a god or be him a devil, we will accept him. That's how ripe we are in this connection that I was talking about earlier before we went to the break.
Do you think people are going to be begging for this kind of help?
Well, just look at the major disasters that we've had here recently, and people have begged for help. I mean, Katrina, people went for days on end without any help. You know, if there's any kind of huge natural disaster, such as the caldera under Yellowstone,
right.
We've been having these little earthquakes around here, and then it runs along the New Madrid Fault.
Well, if that caldera goes, we're cooked, literally.
Yes, we're going to be begging for help. I mean, we're already begging for help economically. Things are happening in this country that 20 years ago, we would have never thought it would be possible. We would never have thought we would have been bankrupt in this country. There are things that are accelerating. And again, what Art used to call the quickening, it is accelerating to the point where we are racing towards the end time. And that connection with the Antichrist and the UFO phenomenon is this, is that we are not at the pinnacle of evolution. Physically, we have come to the point, but at the very pinnacle of human evolution is not a physical one, George, but what is called a spiritual evolution, and that's what the Antichrist is going to use.
Are these beings, Aaron, from another planetary system or something else?
Well, I know there's theories out there that you know, say that they're from the planet Nibiru and the planet X, and I believe you got someone in your upcoming show talking about that. I personally don't believe there's evidence for extraterrestrial life on other planets. Matter of fact, one of you know, the Curiosity Mars rover that just landed.
Yeah.
I was one of the chosen ones whose name went on that little microchip on the rover.
Ah,
has landed
okay.
on Mars, and I don't think so. There's valid scientific reasons why I think that, but the point is this, is that it's simply not possible for life to sustain itself out in the stellar bodies. Life is really designed here for Earth. We have just the right temperature. We have the right atmosphere. We have water. We have all the things that make life, and life is a very delicate balance.
Well, there could be a billion planets like Earth, though.
Well, hypothetically, theoretically, yes, there could be. But what we see is that life was created very, very specifically for Earth to be inhabited. Matter of fact, if you take out any of these, just within our solar system of the in the Milky Way galaxy, if you remove
it, collapses
any of these, it's going to all collapse. So it's the Earth is very dependent on these other planets, just like Jupiter, to pull in such a gravitational pull to really absorb all these, you know, meteors that could hit the Earth. Without Jupiter, man, we may have been gone a long time ago.
Oh, that's true. Without the moon, we would be. Well, so let me ask you this, though, about the physical craft that they show up in, that people have seen. What are they? Illusions? Deceptions? What are they? If they're not coming from a planetary system, what do you need a spacecraft for?
Well, the spacecraft is part of the UFO phenomenon. Will it be real? I don't know. It may very well indeed be real. It's the fact of this is a foreshadow of the thing to come, and because people are very willing to accept extraterrestrial life and life on other planets.
Well, what you're saying, though, it's a deception. The reason why I say this, Aaron and Michael, I mean, the cover of your fine book, Alien Agenda, has a craft beaming down lights on the pyramids.
Well, and we see that they have the capability, George, of manipulating space and time. Matter of fact, I interviewed Steve Allen for the Stephenville Lights back in 2008, and you know, we see these craft appearing, and Steve gave a remarkable report about that on the Stephenville Lights. But let me tell you, the U.S. Air Force out of Fort Worth was seen by multiple people throughout the counties.
Well, I know. Well, I'm confused though. What are you saying the craft might be?
Well, the craft very well may be physical.
Well, I think it is. I just think it's interdimensional.
And there's no question that they can appear physically, but they are hyperdimensional. They are interdimensional. But when they appear, and the reason I brought up the Stephenville Lights is because it's interesting that when they display, George, and they manifest in our time continuum, they are manipulating the laws of physics. And so when they do that, they display, I think, some type of plasma discharge, and that's why people are seeing lights, and they're multicolored, and they're fast-moving. But yet, at the same time, people has also witnessed physical phenomenon that appear to be as craft and flying as such. And so, yes, if they can appear, these fallen angels, if they can appear as humans— and if they can appear throughout our history, they can certainly have the means to produce a physical, tangible craft if they wanted to. I don't think they need to; that they require that. But I think as part of the deception.
Can I jump in on this a second? My idea is that what's in that craft is something different from a fallen angel. Because Aaron's right. Angels don't need a craft to do what they're going to do.
No, but they do need it to trick you.
Well, see, but I think what's in that craft isn't strictly a fallen angel.
What is in there?
Well, you know, the Nephilim were a product of half angel, half man. Now, I know this is going to sound wild, but think of all the descriptions that you find with people who have had some kind of an encounter with an alien or been taken aboard a ship, and they talk about their eyes being like cat's eyes, and they describe how their body
or reptilian.
Yes, right. And I'm leaning, and I because I don't have any firsthand experience, I'm just trying to put it together here, but I'm looking at another hybrid, but instead of angel man, it would be angel animal.
Angel animal. Interesting combination, huh?
Because that's a different thing. See, the giants didn't get to move like their fathers, the fallen angels. They appeared as men, just very large. They may have had knowledge and those kinds of issues and strength. But when you've got these things that are in the UFOs, and you don't get the giant picture there, you get a diminutive picture with animal-type characteristics tied to it. And it makes you wonder if, you know, what's going on, is it more manipulation of the gene pool of what's on this earth? And those things would actually need those vehicles.
Can I call your discussion tonight your theories? Is that accurate?
You know, in the part we're talking about right now, you certainly could. Yeah, I think there's some of these things, as far as I'm concerned, they're kind of nailed down in the Bible. But, boy, a lot of this, it's just our understanding based on what we see.
All right. And Michael, if I'm reading you right, this creature that looks human-like, are we talking about the Antichrist from the Bible?
Now, this guy's going to look just like a man. I'm convinced of that.
Right, but is it the Antichrist?
Yeah, absolutely. That's where this whole thing is headed.
Is it here now?
No.
It is not.
No. No, there are some things in the Bible that would tell you that not until that marker of the blessed hope, the rapture, not until that takes place, is all of this other going to be able to tumble out.
All right, and that rapture, of course, is the disappearance of how many people?
Well, you know what? I don't know the answer to that. I couldn't tell you. It could be catastrophic, or it may not be so much.
Because the Bible does says no man knows the time or date, right?
Right, and you know what? That date setting, boy, that's dangerous stuff. But here's the thing. The apostle that writes the letters to this particular age says the mystery of iniquity is already at work, but there's something withholding until it's time. And that's why I said earlier, we're not going to see everything that's going to be seen right now. Right now, all we're seeing is the bits and the pieces and it's kind of acclimating everybody to it. And then one day when it happens, folks will just say, "I knew it. I knew this is what was going to happen."
Okay. Well, when we come back, I'm going to open up the phone lines. Lots of folks are fascinated with this topic. They want to ask you both questions. Dr. Aaron Judkins, Dr. Michael McDaniel, our guest tonight. I told you it was going to be fascinating. Alien Agenda. Your calls are next.